Good evening, Wahoos and fellow ACC sports fans. This is Frank Maloney with my trusty co-host Jim Hobgood and our super-duper, can't-be-topped research analyst, Michael Tusky. Well, this week it's all about picking up the pieces after the streak was broken on Saturday.
It was broken.
Pretty much broken.
Shattered, I believe, would be a better term.
17 seconds in. UVA fans are regrouping for a must-win home game this coming weekend versus Eastern Michigan with a 6 o'clock p.m. kickoff, which I think should appeal to most Cavalier fans. Gives them a chance to get some things done all day and then head up to Charlottesville for some tailgating.
Although I heard from some fans at the game the other day that would have preferred an earlier start to the North Carolina game.
Yeah, well, that's...
You know, us old folks, it goes beyond our bedtime when you have a 6 o'clock start.
Yeah, you are definitely putting yourself in a certain category there. Should we call Westminster Canterbury?
Well, at least I can go back to the Miami game. It starts at noon, you know.
Anyhow, the Cavaliers will be returning to the friendly confines of Scott Stadium. Who's Talking is here for you Wahoo fans. Jim and I will discuss the UNC game and preview the upcoming Eastern Michigan game. And also, we're going to promote the next live remote broadcast, which will be at Richmond BMW coming up on Wednesday, October 27th.
One week from tonight.
Very excited about that. Return visit. We're glad that you've joined us.
Yeah, another road trip next week, and we'll be talking about that throughout the show tonight. As always, I have a terrific show lined up for you this evening. We are delighted to be joined shortly by former UVA star offensive tackle Jim Dombrowski, a member of the College Football Hall of Fame, one of the retired jerseys at the University of Virginia. Jim will be our first guest tonight, as I say, joining us in a few minutes. He'll be followed in the second half hour by Chris Wright, a regular guest of Who's Talking. He's the editor of the Saber and really has a lot of insights on all the sports going on over in Charlottesville. We'll have Dr. David Nediff from West End Orthopedic to talk about injuries, including the knee surgery recently to Sammy Zaglinski of the basketball team. And then top of the next hour, we will be joined by UVA head soccer coach George Gelnavach, the defending NCAA champion, as they work their way through their season. And I think the Virginia soccer team currently ranked third nationally, so he'll be joining us just after the top of the hour at 7 o'clock. There are several ways to follow the show, and Frank will now describe them.
Who's Talking is streaming live on sportsradio910.com and thesaber.com. In addition, we encourage call-ins tonight. Just ring in to 804-345-0910. That's 345-0910. All shows are archived on thesaber.com, so if you miss us, you can always catch up later on the Saber. Usually takes us about 24 hours to get it up on the Saber. We also encourage all of our fans to go to Facebook. Just search Who's Talking, become a fan, and then register your comments and your thoughts. We encourage everyone to send questions, comments via Facebook. We're looking for call-ins tonight. Just call 345-0910.
Yeah, we have a little football discussion tonight. If you want to call in with an opinion on the quarterback situation, you're welcome to do that. If you want to call in about the defensive scheme, you're welcome to do that, the 3-4 versus the 4-3. If you want to get technical about it, I think a lot has to do with personnel. But anyway, that was kind of a brutal loss on Saturday. My attitude is you always hate to get humbled at home. You hate to get humbled any time, but particularly at home against a longtime rival, North Carolina.
Plus a team that you've owned for 29 years since 1981 at home. But obviously this is a different type of year, and Coach London is rebuilding. And anyhow, I understand that we've got Jim Dombrowski coming online shortly. Jim wore jersey number 73 when he was with the Cavaliers back in the early 80s, 1982 through 1985. They retired his number some years later. He's also was inducted into the College Hall of Fame in 2008. Jim was recognized when he was at the University of Virginia. He was a two-time winner of the Jacobs Blocking Trophy, which is extraordinary. That recognizes the ACC's best blocker.
I think you were recognized as a blocking trophy at your fraternity house, right? Blocking the keg?
That's correct, as well as the jukebox, trust me. Jim was also a cornerstone on the famous UVA team that won the Peach Bowl against Purdue back in 1984. I was there. Wish I'd been on the field dancing up and down and enjoying that revelry following that win. Virginia won that game 27-24. Anyhow, Jim in 1985 was named to virtually all the All-American teams, and I believe he was the first unanimous All-American in the history of UVA football, which is truly remarkable. Anyhow, if Jim, are you on the line there?
I sure am.
Very good. Glad that you could be with us. We had your cohort, Don Makowski, with us a few weeks ago, and then just last week, Charles McDaniel. So they're pretty much trying to make sure we've gotten the 80s covered. So glad that
sounds
you could,
like it.
Glad that you could be with us. A couple quick questions to get you started tonight. Notice that you grew up in New York State. What brought you to Charlottesville, Virginia?
Actually, when I was being recruited by colleges, somebody gave me a wonderful bit of advice that I took to heart, and essentially it was, don't choose the college based on the athletic program. Don't choose the college based on the head coach. Choose the college where you would feel most comfortable if you weren't playing that sport. And that just made a lot of sense to me, and that was kind of the thought process I had when I was visiting the different schools, and UVA just stood out, and that's where I felt most comfortable, and so that's why I ended up there.
Yeah, Jim, the team was 1-10, I guess, the year before you got there, so I guess you weren't coming to build on a successful program. And tell me about the transition.
I was recruited by Bestwick, so I was there for that 1-10 year.
Oh, okay. All right. So were you a redshirt that year?
Yeah, I was redshirted.
Okay. I was going to ask you about George Welsh and what his involvement. I guess he didn't have any involvement from the recruiting standpoint. But let me ask you about George. What was it like playing for George, particularly in those early years?
Oh, I thought it was great. I think George is a wonderful person. He's obviously a fabulous coach. A lot of people had a difficult time understanding George and just where he was coming from and his very dry sense of humor. But I always got along with George. I think he's just a fabulous human being and a terrific football coach. And he helped teach us how to win. Really, Coach Bestwick left. The cupboards somewhat full with talent that George and his staff were able to come in and utilize and really help create the legacy of what Virginia football has become.
Jim, back in 1979, looking back, Dick Bestwick had a 6-5 record that year, and I was in school then. I'll never forget how exciting it was, not only at the games, but also just around the grounds at the university at that time, that, you know, Virginia finally got off the schneid there and was putting out a much better football team. And obviously, you came along and you were one of the cornerstones, really, with Bob Olderman and guys like Makowski and Barry Word and Howard Petty and John Ford and all those guys. Talk about Coach Welsh and his philosophies pertaining to offense.
Really, it was pretty simple. Normally, when we went into the huddle, we'd have a couple plays called, and it was the quarterback's responsibility to determine which one of those plays was the one that we were going to run. It was based on some key, whether it was a secondary alignment or the front seven alignment. It's just one of those things that when the first time you hear it, it's like, that makes so much sense. Instead of just calling one play and then possibly having an audible, go up there with a couple plays and let the quarterback make the proper adjustment based on what the defense is giving you. There's no perfect offensive play, and there's no perfect defensive formation. Defensively, you're either taking away something, and by doing that, you're giving up something else. Same thing with the offense. So it was pretty simple. Just take advantage of what the defense has given you.
One last George Welsh question. When was the first time you saw him throw the hat, and describe the technique?
It probably was 5 minutes into that first spring practice. Yeah, his hat got spiked a lot. But I understand that because I have a similar when I'm coaching and something doesn't go right, my hat gets spiked a lot too. It's just it's a convenient item to get out some frustration.
Now you say I know you're a financial advisor. You mentioned coaching. Where are you coaching?
I've been helping the Mandeville High football team the past couple of years. That stopped just before this current football season. My sons, all my kids attended Mandeville High, and my sons played football, and I was able to coach when my older son was going through, and he's now a freshman at Mississippi State, and my youngest son is currently playing on that team. So I help coach the offensive line at the local high school here.
Yeah, I'm sure they have no idea what an advantage that is. Holy cow. Jim, going back to some of the players that you've got to play with at Virginia and vice versa, at what point, whether it was in practices or games, was it obvious to you or apparent to you that Mikowski and Howard Beaver Petty and Barry Word and John Ford and all those guys, Geno Zimmerling, at what point did you realize that you guys might be pretty good?
Well, I think we always felt like the starting 22 could compete against any starting 22 in the country. When we first got to Virginia, the depth wasn't there. And really, that's the main difference between a program like an Alabama currently and Virginia when I got there was you just don't have the depth of talent that one of those top-notch teams have. So we felt like the top 22 could compete, but it sure is a whole lot better when maybe your top 35 or 40 guys can compete with the best teams in the country. And so the success we had early on in 83 and 84 allowed the coaching staff to go out and recruit better high school talent. And that was really the ball rolling downhill that culminated when UVA had the number one ranking for the two or three weeks, I think it was, back in the mid-90s.
Right.
Jim, do you have a favorite memory or two of your days as a Cavalier?
Oh, that's easy. You guys hit on it earlier. My absolute favorite memory is walking into the hotel in Atlanta after the Peach Bowl victory, and the hotel had a hole in the atrium that went up, I don't know, 8-10 stories, and five or six of those stories were ringed with people, and everybody was happy and celebrating, and the pep band was there, and that's my most fond memory of my time at UVA, and yeah, I mean, there's a lot of little ones that go along with it. Being in the locker room after the loss to Maryland for the conference championship, and then 20 minutes after you walk off the field, you're accepting a bid to go play in the school's first bowl game. So there's just a lot of neat little snippets of moments that are near and dear, but by far the most prominent one is walking into that hotel after the game and just the atmosphere that was in the hotel.
You know, it's interesting, Jim, that's the exact memory that Don Mikowski recited just a few weeks ago.
It's a pretty memorable event.
You know, George Welsh was with us last year. Coach Welsh was talking about some of his big games, particularly early on, where he started to get a feeling that Virginia could be a competitive team in the conference and break into the top 20, and he cited the 1983 game at home against North Carolina when Virginia came from behind to win 17-14. Mm-hmm. And then he also recited the September 29th game, away game, the next year in 84 at Virginia Tech where Mikowski threw the
John
bomb.
Ford made that that fourth down grab. Yeah.
Do you remember that particular play, the fourth and one where he threw the long pass to Ford?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Somebody in town in Charlottesville has got just a fabulous picture of John Ford catching that pass. And if you look at it, he's actually catching the back half of the football. So it was, I mean, tenths of inches away from being an incomplete pass. It's just kind of funny how just a small difference could have changed the fortunes of a lot of different people. But
Jim, can you hang with us for a moment? We got to take a commercial break here, but we'll be back if you can stay through the break.
Sure, no problem.
All right, we'll be back with Jim Dombrowski after these messages. Stay with us. All right, welcome back to Who's Talking, Jim Hobgood, alongside Frank Maloney and our analyst and research guy, Michael Tusky. We're visiting with Jim Dombrowski, former Virginia All-America. And Jim, I think Frank has a message that you sent to Joe Geek for his retirement gathering. I think anybody that played football or basketball at Virginia has a lot of Joe Geek stories, but I'll let Frank ask you about your message to Joe.
Sure.
All right, Jimbo, apparently you sent a telegram to Barry Parkhill, and this is loosely reported from a friend of mine who apparently was at the retirement party or whatever this event was. It says here that you recalled once that a player came in with a sprained ankle after practice or whatever, and Joe Geek told him to put it in a bucket of ice water. And the athlete said, "But that's too cold," the player said. Joe suggested he just place the ice on the affected area. And the athlete said, "But that's too cold, too," the player insisted. And then, "Fine," Joe said, "why don't you bend over and stick your ankle up blank and then drink some ice water?" You remember
absolutely
that telegram?
True. That is an absolutely true story, and that is my favorite Joe Geek story.
Joe Geek was
Joe. Great. You know, Jim. I was at the game Saturday. The last couple of weeks, I've run into Joe, and of course, I first met Joe in the early '70s when I was there. And I swear to God, the guy has not changed a lick in the last 40 years. He still looks exactly the same, and one of the funniest guys you'll ever encounter. But just to change the subject, I know you played for the New Orleans Saints. Had to be pretty special what they did last year, and what did that mean to the area down there in New Orleans?
Oh, obviously it was tremendously special. Anytime you win a championship, a lot of things have got to fall in place, and the Saints were almost a team of destiny the way things were unfolding almost from the beginning of the season. Obviously, the people down here were very thirsty for a championship. It never occurred. It's been 41 years they were waiting for a championship, and the team was finally able to break through and win the whole shooting match. So it was a tremendous time down here.
How's New Orleans doing? It's been 5 years now since Katrina. Is the area starting to show signs of real recovery?
Yes and no. There's certain areas that still really aren't that dramatically different from 5 years ago, right after Katrina and the water receded. There are other areas where there's a lot of new growth. It really has had a profound effect, and will always have a profound effect on the area of New Orleans. There's a down here we call them parishes instead of counties. There's a parish to the east of New Orleans called St. Bernard Parish, and that area was particularly hard hit by Katrina. And where I live is north of Lake Pontchartrain, and a lot of the residents from St. Bernard Parish evacuated to St. Tammany Parish. And in the matter of literally weeks, the population of St. Tammany Parish just about doubled. And so you can imagine the infrastructure challenges that has created for our parish. The central business district is still recovering. I don't think it's you can go down there middle of the day. What used to be a very vibrant downtown area with obviously all the businessmen going out and getting lunches and having meetings and all that kind of stuff, and you just don't have the same number of people down in the CBD area anymore. Katrina probably blew away a majority of New Orleans upper middle class professional population, physicians, attorneys, people like that. When the population got dispersed, their clients got dispersed with it. And so if you're a physician or an attorney and your client base has disappeared, you got to go to where they are and rebuild your practice. So that's probably the longest lasting effect is the professional void that Katrina created.
Jim, that's excellent. Listen to that sort of explanation there. Got to go back one more time. There's a big parallel going on now. Obviously, Mike London followed Al Groh, and the team is rebuilding at this point. Very similar to what you went through. You know, the Virginia team was coming out of the Bestwick era into the George Welch era. What would you say would be the keys for a faster turnaround than a slower turnaround?
I think Mike and his staff is on the right track. And I mean, being down here in New Orleans, I don't get a tremendous amount of coverage being knee-deep in SEC territory. But through the beauty of the Internet and YouTube, there were a lot of snippets on some of the early season practices that Mike and his staff were conducting. And the biggest difference that I can see from the limited number of practices that I saw under Al Groh was Mike's got a much more physical practice, and I think that's very important for these kids to learn how to play the game. Quite honestly, anybody that's going to play Division I football in high school, 99 times out of 100, they were the best athlete on the field, and they just got by on raw athletic ability. Well, when you jump up to college, that you're not the best athlete on the field anymore, and there's going to be some more intense competition because you're going against better players. And you need to learn how to play the game and deal with some adversity, both mentally and physically. And I think the type of practices that Mike is running helps those kids learn how to play the game and survive during the tough parts that occur during every football game.
Yeah, Jim, so, I don't mean to interrupt, but I would say 44-10 is adversity. But last week's score against Carolina.
Carolina's a pretty doggone football team right now.
Yeah, they have some talent. They have some problems, but they have talent, too. But at any rate,
They were rated pretty high preseason for a reason, and you know, they had some issues as to with suspensions and stuff like that, but they're a pretty doggone good program.
Absolutely. Well, we've been visiting with Jim Dombrowski, former Virginia All-American. Jim, we thank you for your time, and thank you for joining us tonight.
Really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Jim, have a great night, buddy.
Former Wahoo Jim Dombrowski. We're going to go to the bottom of the hour break. When we return, we will be joined by Chris Wright of the Sabre.